from ABC News, World News This Week. I'm John Grimes, ABC News. Listen.
The yeas are 47, the nays are 53. The nomination of John Tower to be Secretary of Defense is not confirmed.
Hey, I thought you were closed down, man. I thought the airline was closed down. I got tickets. I'm stuck here. What the hell are you doing making money? You're generating more money and we're all stuck.
Channel One is a 12-minute news and information program that is designed specifically from the viewpoint of a teenager.
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's World News.
Just a drink or two can affect your driving. This man knows.
I learned it the hard way. I pulled out of this parking lot right in front of a guy. And the thing is, I saw him. I saw him coming. But I could have sworn he was a lot further away. I knew as soon as he hit me that it was my fault. I also knew I wasn't drunk. I only had two drinks. Normally, I wouldn't have had them, but I met a friend. We stopped off. I bought him one. He bought me one. And that was it. It just happened. You want to hear the best part? I'm dead set against drunk drivers, and here I caused a wreck because of two lousy drinks. It's really humiliating for a guy like me to have to go up in front of a judge on a thing like this. I don't even think of taking a drink from one week to the next. I've got three kids, and I think of how lucky I was that I didn't kill myself or somebody else. I'll guarantee you one thing, there isn't going to be a next time.
Even a little drinking can dull your judgment. Think about it. A public service from the Motor Vehicle Manufacturers Association.
Much of the week's news involved flying, a cabinet nomination that didn't fly at all in the U.S. Senate, and an airline that flew very little in the skies. The cabinet nomination was that of John Tower to be Secretary of Defense. The vote came late in the week, but before it did, there was plenty of last-minute debate over the nominee's personal life.
The first charge was that Tower was with a Russian ballerina in Texas, climbed on the table and all that stuff. It turns out it's completely false. Not a word of truth in it.
I will show you facts, not rumors, of alcohol abuse within the last 6 years.
We've gotten three or four new allegations from people that give their names, give their addresses, give their phone numbers, give the particular situation that they allege as they've observed.
From my reading of the FBI and committee materials, I find the proof is simply not there to deny John Tower this nomination on the charges relating to his personal conduct.
If you want to know, have I seen him under the influence of alcohol, the answer is yes.
I doubt that John Tower could get by with putting an olive in a glass of milk.
This is not a time, Mr. President, for our country to be having the political equivalent of a high school food fight.
We have seen the Senate, the so-called world's most deliberative body, become a pipeline for gossip and smear, a peddler of rumors and leaks, a partisan hotbed of character assassination.
It's the weight, the number of times, the amount of evidence here simply cannot be ignored and cannot be denied.
His relationship with the defense industry has clearly compromised his position and reflected, I believe, adversely on his judgment.
We simply cannot have a secretary whose independence and judgment are subject to question.
The vote was taken on Thursday, and the President of the Senate, Vice President Dan Quayle, announced the result.
The yeas are 47, the nays are 53. The nomination of John Tower to be Secretary of Defense is not confirmed.
With that, Tower became the first cabinet nominee in 30 years to be rejected by the Senate. Pennsylvania Republican John Hines says all the hoopla was harmful.
I do not remember that episode included a similar situation where feelings between the members of the body have ever run so high. It will take time to heal these wounds. They run deep.
But Alabama Democrat Howell Heflin, who broke ranks to vote for Tower, is not worried.
Oh, I think it'll be a simmering period, and the people get over the emotions of this. And then I think we'll settle down. We got too many problems we got to work together on to solve.
The nominee doesn't want bad blood.
It's time for the bitterness, rancor, and anger to fade. And for those elements of government who have been involved in the confirmation process to unite and to be about the people's business.
As for his own business,
it is my intention to return to private life in my beloved Texas, but I shall speak out from time to time on national issues when my knowledge, experience, and insights may contribute to public debate.
And while John Tower's rejection was a major defeat for President Bush, Majority Leader George Mitchell said,
"This involved a specific person nominated for a particular and, in my judgment, uniquely important position and represents no effort to be harmful to the president."
Mr. Bush moved quickly to name another candidate for defense secretary, announcing his choice late Friday.
"I'm happy to be here this afternoon to present my nominee to be Secretary of Defense, Congressman Dick Cheney of Wyoming."
Cheney is a 10-year veteran of the House, served as President Ford's chief of staff, and is well-liked on both sides of the aisle. He has a history of heart problems, though, and while that could cause some concern at his confirmation hearings, Cheney says it shouldn't.
"I talked just this afternoon with my cardiologist, who's followed my case for several years, and to make certain he was aware of this, and so that he would be in a position to say, as he has, as he did tell me just today, that there's absolutely no medical reason why I cannot undertake this assignment."
Members of the Senate have been stumbling over each other in an effort to say nice things about Cheney, so his confirmation should be no problem. For Eastern Airlines, the problem was pickets. These very vocal members of the Machinists Union, who struck Eastern a week ago, were joined by many of the airline's pilots this week, all of which led the chief negotiator for the Machinists, Charles Bryan, to say,
"I think you're seeing evidence nationwide of the greatest demonstration of solidarity that's ever been exhibited in this country."
"Eastern has filed in the Federal District Court of Miami an action saying they're asking for a permanent injunction and damages against the pilots' union for staging an illegal primary strike against Eastern Airlines."
But the court ruled that the pilots could observe the picket lines, and Eastern's Robin Mattel said the company had no choice but to start laying off non-union people.
"By continuing to stay out, the pilots are committing economic suicide. They're risking their careers and the careers of all Eastern men and women. That's 30,000 employees.
We just feel so let down. We were prepared for the machinists to walk out. We knew they made their position very, very clear. And it came as just a devastating shock to see that the pilots didn't come in.
I sat home yesterday and cried all day, and you know, that was my day, and it's hard, but I will tell you, I'll die before I'll cross that picket line."
And there was little doubt about whom the strikers blamed.
"All of the traveling public should understand that they have only Frank Lorenzo to blame for the inconvenience they suffer. The unions accepted arbitration. Frank Lorenzo said no."
"I'll be here till the end. We're going down with the ship, and we're taking Frank with us, hopefully."
"I realize that I personally have been made the issue by some. And I'm not going to kid you by saying that some of those efforts haven't hurt my family and me."
Frank Lorenzo, the head of Eastern's parent company, bought the airline 3 years ago. His philosophy? Employees would rather work for less than lose their jobs. This past Thursday, Lorenzo called a news conference.
"We're here to announce that Eastern has filed to reorganize itself."
Chapter 11, of course, implies reorganization, implies getting the airline reorganized, ready to fly again. But most importantly, it gives Frank Lorenzo, and officially the owner, Texas Air Corporation, a lot of flexibility. It means they can reorganize, they can sell the airline, they can sell it piecemeal, they can make a merger. Tremendous flexibility to do almost whatever he wants.
But ABC Stephen Ogg says that does not include doing what he did with another property, Continental Airlines.
Unlike the Continental Airlines bankruptcy a few years ago, he can't simply automatically abrogate the union contracts. The judge has to take care of that.
Eastern's parent company, Texas Air, owes its combined unions at least $500 million in pension funds. And an attorney familiar with pension law, Jerry Fader, says that will have to be paid.
"There's no way that Texas Air can walk away from this, not even by the device of going
putting Eastern into Chapter 11.
Meanwhile, with most of its pilots not crossing the picket lines, Eastern was losing business.
Our bookings are essentially all gone. We are in the process of shutting down reservations offices because there are no calls coming in.
But Eastern's competitors were getting calls.
Thank you for calling Delta Airlines. Our phones are unusually busy due to the work stoppage of a major airline.
And Eastern ticket holders were looking elsewhere.
Try to get to Pan Am or something else. I mean, it's no big deal what airline I go on. I'm not particularly loyal to Eastern Airlines.
The carrier flew what it could.
For the immediate future, our operations will be confined to the air shuttle between New York, Boston, and Washington, and three flights a week from between Miami, Buenos Aires, and Santiago, Chile.
And that really frustrated a psychologist from Chicago, Michael Sheehan, who watched as tickets were sold for those foreign flights while he was stuck in Miami.
They told me they closed the damn airline down. And now they're here. We're standing right here in front of them, and they're doing... Hey, I thought you were closed down, man. I thought the airline was closed down. I got tickets. I'm stuck here. What the hell are you doing making money? You're generating more money, and we're all stuck. I know, not you folks. You're stuck, too, with damn Eastern.
And as industry analyst with Merrill Lynch, Timothy Petty says, Eastern ticket holders may be left holding the bag now that the airlines filed for bankruptcy.
The creditors are likely to get their debts reorganized. In the bankruptcy, the order of preference goes creditors, stockholders or employees, and unfortunately, lastly, the ticket holders. So I think the tickets, unfortunately, at least for now, are worthless.
Eastern tried to drum up business by rolling back fares on its shuttle to 1961 level.
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, passengers will fly between either New York and Boston or New York and Washington at the fare, one way of $12.
$49 Monday through Thursday. The gimmick seems to have worked, and although as the weekend arrived, travelers boarding Eastern could not fail to see and hear pickets who implored them not to fly.
Don't fly, Eastern!
The machinists will show up on next month's unemployment list, but for February, the jobless rate of 5.1% was the lowest in 15 years. Nearly 117 million Americans were working. And while that's good, there is a downside, the fear of inflation. Economist David Weiss of Data Resources thinks the government may have to raise interest rates to cool down the economy.
The repercussion is that the Federal Reserve is going to have to hit the brakes even harder. Basically, if the car isn't slowing down, the tendency is to jam the brakes on harder and hope you don't skid.
Weiss is looking for a hike in the prime rate of at least a quarter point. President Bush and Congress are starting to talk budget, and the cost of fighting the drug war will play a big part in the final figure. Mr. Bush left no doubt how he feels the dealers should be treated.
Drug dealers need to understand a simple fact. You shoot a cop, and you're going to be severely punished, fast. And if I had my way, I'd say with your life.
Mr. Bush was in New York to publicize the country's drug problems and to meet with the family of a recently murdered federal drug agent. At the same time, Attorney General Dick Thornburg returned from a tour of three major drug-producing countries, Bolivia, Peru, and Colombia, and said the outlook was bleak for those countries to do much to stop the drug lords operating within their boundaries. Alcohol remains the drug of choice for most people, and for Kitty Dukakis.
Once one is dependent, a drug or a drink, in whatever form, cannot be used a day at a time. And that is why I had a relapse in November, this time in the form of alcohol abuse. And now I know that I am an alcoholic.
The wife of the Democratic candidate for president in last fall's election has just spent a month in a treatment center. Mrs. Dukakis says she hopes her experience will help others deal with whatever dependency problem they might have. The U.S. and the Soviet Union may have better relations these days, but that doesn't mean they're still not keeping tabs on each other by spying. The FBI arrested a military attaché, Lieutenant Colonel Yuri Pakhtusov, accusing him of trying to buy classified documents from an American whose company does business with the government.
The American had reported Pakhtusov's approaches, which began in August 1988. The documents dealt with how the United States government protects classified and other sensitive information in its computer systems.
The State Department ordered the Russian to leave And spokesman Charles Redmond says the response to that was predictable.
The Soviets have protested the expulsion, but have advised us that Paktushov will be leaving as requested. There is no reason to believe it should affect our relationship. The Soviets know, as they always have, that we will protect our national security whenever it's threatened.
It's unclear if the Kremlin will retaliate by booting an American out of the USSR. Meantime, the new spirit of Glasnost apparently has filtered down to communist countries such as Poland, as we hear from correspondent Alma Kodrajic.
The Polish government and Solidarity have agreed on a plan for national elections in June, which could end the Communist Party's dominance in the legislature. The plan guarantees Solidarity candidates 35% of seats in the current parliament and also calls for creation of a new Senate with all seats up for grabs. But the election plan, like the legalization of Solidarity, depends on both Solidarity and the government accepting the entire roundtable package of political and economic proposals. Alma Kodrajic, ABC News, Warsaw.
No such reconciliation going on in Tibet, though, where citizens who favor independence have clashed repeatedly with Chinese officials. Protests such as this one are common, and in one of them this past week, about a dozen Tibetans were killed. The specter of chemical weapons in the Middle East was raised again this week, but this time the country involved is a U.S. ally, Egypt. And as correspondent John McQuethy reports, Egypt is not Libya.
The United States has protested to Egypt about a new chemical weapons plant the Egyptians are assembling near Cairo with the help of a company from Switzerland. But beyond the protest, U.S. officials say nothing else is expected to happen. There will be no threats, for example, to cut off the $2.3 billion in annual U.S. aid to Egypt. This is in sharp contrast to how the U.S. handled Libyan attempts to build a poison gas plant. President Reagan even threatened to blow up that facility if it went into operation. The distinction U.S. officials are making in the two cases is that Egypt is a friend and has no record of using poisonous gas or supporting terrorism. Libya has records of doing both. John McQuethy, ABC News, the State Department.
In the Senate, hearings began this past week on the need for legislation to prevent foreign terrorists from stopping publication of Salman Rushdie's controversial book, The Satanic Verses. Kentucky's Mitch McConnell is the ranking Republican on the committee.
The Ayatollah's death sentence has shaken the Western world to its very foundation. Freedom of speech is not just valued in this country. It is a virtual extension of the American moral and legal center of gravity.
The Speaker of Iran's parliament addressed that issue in Tehran this past week and appeared to warn the West of a possible escalation of hostilities unless the matter were resolved to Iran's satisfaction. As it was, Iran broke off diplomatic relations with Britain over the affair, and as John Cooley reported, Britain responded.
British Foreign Secretary Sir Geoffrey Howe announced in Parliament today that an unspecified number of Iranians living in Britain will be deported for security reasons because of threats of violence in the Salman Rushdie case. He said the activities of other Iranians in Britain are under review. The Iranian consulate in the Crown Colony of Hong Kong must close within 2 weeks. Sources say it was a center of Iranian intelligence activities in the Far East. Earlier, Britain warned all its subjects still in Lebanon to leave that country because they are under threat of kidnapping and other violence by pro-Iranian groups there. John Cooley, ABC News, London.
In this country, no proof, but officials suspect Iran may have played some role in an incident involving Mrs. Will Rogers. Her husband commanded the cruiser Vincennes last July when it mistakenly shot down an Iranian passenger jet in the Persian Gulf and killed all 290 people on board. Mrs. Rogers was driving the family van in La Jolla, California this past Friday when it suddenly exploded.
It was just like an inferno. The car was just completely engulfed in flames. A couple of the windows on the passenger side were blown out. And smoke was just pouring out of it.
That man saw Mrs. Rogers get out all right and watched as another man, John Christie, ran to help her.
He stumbled out of the van after it blew up, and she was able to walk over about 10 feet away from her van, and I picked her up and put her in the truck.
If the attack on the Vincennes skipper's wife was indeed in retaliation for the Airbus tragedy, Bruce Hoffman, an expert in international terrorism, says that doesn't bode well.
In the past, terrorists have basically thought that if they wanted to attack American targets, there were enough scattered throughout the world that they didn't have to come to the United States to do so. And the fact that an attack has been staged here may be just psychologically an important threshold that's being crossed.
U.S. officials think Ayatollah Khomeini's threat against Salman Rushdie has sent a message to terrorists that assassination is all right as long as the cause is right. This sing-along was part of a demonstration held by students at Howard University in Washington, D.C. this past week as they protested what they described as racial overtones in the campaign Lee Atwater ran for George Bush last year. Atwater, who is the GOP national chairman, is also on the board of trustees of the mostly black school. At least he was until he resigned as a result of the demonstration. Ironically, Atwater had recently started a campaign to attract blacks to the Republican Party. I'll switch to Channel 1 when World News This Week continues in a moment.
I'm Dom DeLuise. There are millions of drug addicts and alcoholics in the world, and not one of them ever thought that they would become addicted.
Hello, I'm Burt Reynolds. Cheap, popular, and available almost anywhere. I'm talking about designer drugs like crack, tar balls, and XTC. These drugs are killing our children.
I'm Dick Clark. Alcoholism and drug abuse destroy millions of lives every year.
I'm Linda Gray. Drug and alcohol abuse is becoming the largest killer in the country. And the problem is getting worse. If you or someone you know has this problem, Parents Against Alcohol and Drugs wants you to know help is available. Habilitat has a 24-hour toll-free hotline for crisis intervention and referral. 1-800-USA-2525. They can tell you firsthand how they kicked their habit and how you can kick yours. 1-800-USA-2525.
This public service announcement presented by the Habilitat Program and this station. We care about the youth of today.
Something new on the air at six different schools in six different states.
I'm Ken Rogers, and this is Channel 1 for Monday, March 6, 1989. Up front in national news, a crippling strike at Eastern Airlines enters its third day.
It's a $5 million pilot put together by Whittle Communications of Knoxville, Tennessee.
Channel 1 is a 12-minute news and information program that is designed specifically from the viewpoint of a teenager and broadcast every day into high schools via satellite. 10 minutes of programming, sponsored by 2 minutes of commercial messages.
10,000 kids in junior and high school watched and seemed to like what they saw.
A news program like this that's quick-moving and fast-paced, colorful, it can hold our attention and we can learn from it too while we're watching it.
Not everybody likes the idea of 2 minutes of commercials, and some teachers are skeptical about the overall content.
We need to be very careful that the learning materials we use in the classroom are appropriate and are in-depth and are not a quick, cheap sell of some particular point of view or some commercial product.
In fact, one ad was pulled because one city found it too suggestive. But commercials pay the bills, and as the chairman of Channel 1, Chris Whittle, says,
we do try to make a profit. We don't apologize for that. We didn't know we had to in America.
Tomorrow on Channel 1, our exclusive report on Glasnost Teens continues.
Also, science fiction becomes science fact with a new generation of whiz kids. See you tomorrow.
And those are the people and stories that made world news this week. World News This Week was written and produced by Gil Longin. Engineering by Cy Kantrowitz and Tom Kennedy. I'm John Grimes, ABC News, New York.